Hey, did you just have a meeting with a donor and they told you something really, really important and you have no place to put it except for like maybe an Excel spreadsheet or, a random piece of paper in your office? Go to DonorDoc.com. Get a CRM system that works. Get a donor database system that works. Get something that gives you beautiful reports and beautiful dashboards that even your crankiest board member will love. Go to DonorDoc.com. Use the code word DOGOODBETTER at checkout and get a month free. DonorDoc.com. Choosing a partner to help you achieve success in your business or personal finances is a big decision. You need a devoted advisor who's experienced and attentive and invested in helping you accomplish your goals. Hey, you know what that sounds like? Brady Martz. Brady Martz knows that you got a lot of options to choose from, but we're confident that Brady Martz is the right accounting firm for you. They got more than a half a century of experience making every day count through tax, accounting, audit, and business advisory services. So, contact Brady Martz to learn more about their unique solutions that they can provide you, your nonprofit.
Your organization is awesome, but sometimes you want to be even awesomer. It's time to get your fundraising on with your host, fundraising expert and author, Patrick Kirby.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the official Do Good Better podcast. I'm your host, Patrick Kirby, and of course, we talk with people who are going to help our small and medium-sized nonprofits. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about storytelling. We're going to talk a little bit about content. And yeah, I think we're going to talk a little bit about listening and how all of those things are going to help you be a better fundraiser, a better nonprofit leader, and a better community participant, if you will. And I feel like today, this is a great time. We're going to go to the source of really who you would consider in your own community, what a great content producing group is. NPR. Yes, it is. I got Ashley Thornburg. She is a host producer at Prairie Public Broadcasting. Ashley, welcome to the official Do Good Better podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I'm very excited to talk with you today, but if somebody is sort of scrolling through iTunes or Spotify or find us on YouTube and they want to know all the things about what you do, but they don't necessarily know. So 5,000 foot view, you get it, who you are, what you do, and why we're talking today.
Sure. Well, what a producer, I think my favorite definition of what a producer is somebody who anticipates and prevents problems. So that is what I do on sort of a, you know, the strict definition of that word. But what I do as a host, as a listener, as someone who holds space on the radio for other people is listen. And what I believe in very deeply is that everybody has a story to tell, and I'm very interested in the connections that we can build as people and how everything is interrelated. And so what I do is I do a little bit of research. I get very curious. I mean, it's honestly, it's like being paid to be a socially acceptable peeping Tom.
This is the best definition I've ever heard, by the way. That is marvelous.
Thank you. I'm actually naturally a very shy person, but intensely curious about people, but always was afraid to approach people. And so for me, very subconsciously, had to put myself in a position where I would get fired if I didn't learn how to talk to people. And so for me, this radio gear is just a magical crutch that is an excuse to start this conversation with people and then get to listen about what is their weird hobby and what wakes them up at 3 a.m. or what keeps them up until 3 a.m. And, you know, very much at Prairie Public, our mission, educate, involve, inspire the people of the Prairie region. And who better to do that than people who are here and actually part of this flyover country and be the ones capturing those stories and putting them out there to share.
I think this is why I'm really excited for this conversation, because I think a lot of nonprofit leaders don't know necessarily or feel very uncomfortable the way that you probably did as maybe an introvert, but they have a mission they want to talk about.
They have people they want to meet, but they don't necessarily know how to go about having a conversation with individuals who they may not see as their equal, right? You're a person trying to go and meet somebody who is a major donor, who's got a lot of money, who's probably very successful in business. How, as somebody who's just a boots on the ground kind of person, which, by the way, this is something we talk about a lot of time on the show, which is like, yeah, you are an amazing human being doing amazing things for the community. You just don't believe it enough. But there is this awkward moment where you're like, how do I find my equal footing when having a conversation? So I appreciate a lot of these things we're going to talk about this morning. So let's put ourselves into a position where our nonprofit audience who's listening is like, okay, I'm going to go prep for a donor. You yourself, Ashley, you're prepping yourself for an interview with somebody.
Sure.
It's, by the way, everybody, it's the same thing. We're listening. We're trying to build a relationship with somebody to get a story, to make a connection. And that's how you do fundraising. We all know this. So Ashley, put yourself into a position of like, right, getting ready to interview somebody. What are we doing to just kind of prep ourselves to having conversations and building a relationship through an interview?
Yeah. Well, the surface level answer to that is doing the research, taking the time to learn about who that person is and know enough to ask informed questions. And then the really hard part is getting out of your own way. For me, the magic in the conversation comes when I no longer have to be the person in control of the conversation, when I no longer want to be proving to everybody else that I know what this person is and that I'm going to anticipate what they're going to say. And it becomes about getting out of the way, listening to what that person has to say, and finding underneath what it is they do, the reason why they do it. Basically, it's just a continuous search for authenticity.
I really like that. I think when we're having a conversation, it's we have a list of things we want to talk to people about, right? And I need to blurt it out as often as I possibly can so I can get all my talking points out. And then once we're done with my talking points, then I can be done with the conversation. I can move on to something else.
Right.
Probably the worst way to conduct an interview, which is just, I'm going to bullet point all the questions that I have without sort of building some back and forth, where I love what you just said, which is letting them control part of the conversation. What are some of the things that you are listening for while you're having an initial conversation with somebody on the radio? Are there words or phrases or things?
Yeah, it definitely can be a phrase. More often than a phrase, it's a change in the tone of voice. You can hear when their shoulders get higher. You can hear when their face squinches up. You know, as much as possible, we try to do the conversations in person, but we're a statewide broadcast. If I'm talking to somebody in Watford City, they're not going to be in my studio in Fargo. And so you have to learn to listen on a deeper level. And it's sort of like, I'll take this example. If anybody is ever standing on one foot, it's not that difficult, but try it sometime with your eyes closed. And all of a sudden, it's so much harder to stand on one foot because a lot of our processing in our brains, even for just our balance, is visual information, and we can read these cues. And so you have to take all of that out, and then you start listening for these things that are happening on a much more subtle level. So for me, it's not as much what they say as it is how they say it.
I really appreciate that as a tip and a trick, is because I think when we get on the phone with somebody, right, we're not on a Zoom call, we're on a phone, we're not in front of them for coffee yet or something, like, you know, they don't really know why you're calling. You might be doing a thank you call for a donor and like, all right, what do you want? You genuinely just want to go and say, I just wanted to say, I appreciate you. And that minute that wall comes down of like, I don't want to give you any more money. I don't want any. I just want to say thank you. All of a sudden you kind of feel this wave of, oh, Well, in that case, let me tell you a couple of things. And that pause and that acknowledgement that you're not in it for something else is such a key moment to listen for. And I love it. Like, you can see their shoulders kind of just, okay, I'm a little more relaxed. Mm-hmm. I find that I always loved doing interviews, or at least I still to this day take phone calls, and I just pace up and down the hallway. Because if I can't enthusiastically show how excited I am to talk to somebody, I better just like get winded in the hallway, pacing back and forth. Is part of the interview process then, once you get to kind of hear the tone, do the questions that you ask change based on that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd love you to talk a little through that, because I need to know this information. Therefore, I don't know how to make sure that I adjust or improvise based on what everybody's mood is. And this is a skill. Am I wrong that this is a skill you just have to practice over and over again?
It is a skill, and there is absolutely no substitute for experience. It's a skill, but it also has to be an approach to life. If it's something that maybe it's easier when it's in the yoga studio, because this is, for me, it's a sacred space, you know, and I can walk in there and like, there is just sort of a change in how the room feels. Because I'm terrible at the same kind of conversation if it's not being recorded. I lost my train of thought now, of course, because usually I get to write things down and reference them. It absolutely can change. Again, going back to that tone of voice, if you hear a little something, then that's what you need to pay attention to. And so if that is your approach to life, it's much easier to bring into your work, and where there isn't that separation between this is what I do and this is who I am.
I love that you said that about curiosity too upfront, which I think if you are not in general a curious person, it's very difficult to have a really in-depth conversation with a donor or a person or anybody that you're interviewing, because you're just trying to get to the end rather than having the conversation flow with you. And I can't tell you how many times people say, well, like I expected that to be a 20-minute call and it was 2 hours. I go, well, you just did yourself an immense favor by having them just chat with you about stuff. And then you get to pick out the details that matter and connect to your mission a lot more. When you're finding an interview and maybe things go a little cattywampus, so somebody, you can feel it getting a little more tense. Like a donor might say something that goes, oh, that didn't go as well as I thought it. Any tips that you can give to maybe walk back or reapproach the question in a different way so that they don't have this more standoffish feel to it?
That's an interesting question. And it's hard for me to answer that because just the limitations in staffing that we have, we kind of have to charge forward very often. And we don't always get the chance to just kind of go back and stop and say, but certainly there is something to be said for just a pause, taking a breath, nodding like you're doing right now in this conversation, raising an eyebrow, and then say, oh, that's interesting. Tell me more about that, because it's that invitation for them to think more deeply about why they went there. Because always when it comes to big emotion is an invitation to go deeper. You know, fear, fine, it's great, it kept us safe for a really long time, and so we have, you know, greatly developed fear sensors. It's what kept us alive. But then you can go and down a layer and keep peeling that back. And the thing that you thought you were so upset about is never the thing you were actually upset about. It's always 12 layers deep, and it's almost always something about you know, your sense of safety or your sense of duty or responsibility or something that threatens who you are or how you think about how the world should interact. And the more conversations you have like this, the more you find that people tend to want the same things, but have very different ideas about the methodology about going to solve them. They almost never actually disagree on the thing itself, just about how to approach that. And when you can listen to their reasoning behind why they want something like that, that tends to soften that edge and that, you know, sort of big emotional experience, and then let that person calm down and be more thoughtful. It's nice to be in these heightened emotional states because they move the big stuff out of the way. And then that's when the magic really happens.
One of the things that I hope everybody picked up was the question of, or the statement and the invitation, tell me more. Tell me more about that. I'm interested in what you had to say. Tell me more. Mm-hmm. That right there is some of the most brilliant and smart things that one can ask a person, because you've given them zero direction. Mm-hmm. It's wherever they want to go to kind of dig. If you have a donor that's upset about not being thanked properly or mm-hmm. was not a fan of whatever social media post that you did, actually, you're brilliant in the sense of, like, it's never about that. It's mm-hmm. always something different on what either triggered them or what they're really upset about, whether it's the relationship they have, they didn't think their impact was going to be enough, or you're just a person who called at the wrong time, who's going to get the brunt end of, yeah. you know, sort of an aggressive phone call for no other reason rather than bad timing.
Right. And we don't have that many outlets for aggression ultimately.
Yeah. And they don't get to host a podcast where they get to, like, you have a diatribe every day. Mm-hmm. And maybe they are lonely or they don't sort of mm-hmm. have that connection with a person, and you're the first person who might be able to draw out a passion or something enthusiastic that they have been mm-hmm. building up for a while. And regardless of the response, isn't it kind of fun to be the catalyst for that sometimes?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
right?
It is. I mean, it's a big responsibility.
Yeah.
You have to be careful. If you're going to open that door, you have to be prepared to sort of absorb what comes through those floodgates. But, you know, for me, what I know I said there's no substitute for experience, and I stand by that, but one thing that really opened up a lot of doors for me as a radio host and as a radio producer was that I got intensely interested in a yogic lifestyle about 4 years ago. And I'm always careful to say yogic lifestyle because yoga is not something that you do. Okay, this is not a 60-minute thing to look good in Lulu pants that you do once a week at the gym. It is absolutely, as you go deeper into a yogic lifestyle, you find that, for starters, that pose practice thing that they do at the gym is phase three, by the way. There are two that come before that, and, you know, five or six that come after that. It is a multi-level approach to life that ultimately comes down to realizing that the only thing that you have any control over in this entire world is your own reaction. And so I can waste my mental energy getting mad at the person who pays an exact change in front of me at Walgreens, or I can channel that and not be so mad there, but understand that there is a fire inside of me and I can use it to be a catalyst for change or to open up these conversations for other people who are actually doing really good work. I'm just the listener in this end of the equation. And then make space for there to be other people and other ways of life, and coming to navigating this life in a way that starts with mindfulness and yeah. bringing that everywhere else. The founding principle in yoga is called ahimsa, do no harm, or nonviolence. And we believe that all nonviolence in the world starts with nonviolence of the self. And that isn't just, okay, I didn't stab anyone, I'm nonviolent. Did you eat well? Did you get enough water? Did you sleep well? And how is setting yourself up, and how is bringing the best version of yourself into the world a way for everybody to bring the best selves into the world?
I think that is something that I think the nonprofit world needs to hear more often, which is giving yourself grace.
Yeah.
Your whole being is trying to do and enhance and fundraise and execute to make the community better. And if you don't get it right 100% of the time, that's okay, because nobody does.
You're human.
Yeah, exactly. and I think comparing yourself to other successes is another really big self-harm thing for your mental wellness as a nonprofit mm-hmm. leader, especially in fundraising.
Yeah.
You don't have an army of folks. It's maybe just you and a volunteer, or you mm-hmm. and yourself doing all of the heavy lifting, and you can't do that. So you have to look back and say, hey, what am I doing today to kind of help, you know, move the needle mm-hmm. forward?
Yeah. Doing the best you can with what you have every yeah. day. And that sort of consistency builds and builds and builds.
Yeah. Is the consistency for, and again, I think doing enough interviews or having enough conversations and getting started, that's the hard part too. It's picking up the phone. It's getting on to an interview. There's this hesitation I think a lot of people have. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know if it's going to go well or not.
Yeah.
How do you overcome that first initial step of like, I don't want to make a phone call today, or I don't want to do this? I know it's your job to produce a show, but that's it's still hard to do. It's easy to write down a bunch of names that you want to call mm-hmm. and have a conversation. How do you pump yourself up to have one of those conversations or get excited about it rather than going, oh, God, I have to.
Right. Yeah. Well, since I already talked about yoga once, like here goes that's it. Like this is me actually just talking as a yoga teacher now. is it the other thing that we practice is sometimes you just have to do the work, and you have to do the work, and you have to do the same thing over and over and over again to sometimes get those results. You're not always going to get the big payout on every little thing. You're entitled to the action. You're not entitled to the result of the action. So you have to do your best. You have to put it out there. And hopefully what comes back to you what comes back to you will be the result of what you put out there. And if you have to do it over and over and over, that's just the process. There is no getting around that.
If you are a fundraiser, you cannot predict when somebody will give you money. You cannot mm-hmm. predict how much they will give you, but you can predict how many times you're going to get ahead of the game by just focusing on the field work. Just the field activity. How many times did you have a meeting? How many times did you make a phone call? How much did you spend away from your desk doing something else, or away from social media, having actual conversations and being sort of authentic and real? You can control that. And by controlling that, you control everything else, because it'll come naturally mm-hmm. because you've built this wonderful thing.
And you learn how to let go. I mean, it's why in yoga, Shavasana, that pose where you lie down at the end, is the hardest pose in all of yoga. Because you're practicing surrendering.
Yeah. You could be done.
You can't control.
Nope, you're just sitting there.
You did your best.
Yeah,
right. Yeah.
What type of boring questions have you encountered over the years in which that maybe you asked them where, you know, you said it out loud and the person on the other end goes, what on the God's earth? Ask me that for every, and I always think I always think about press junkets when people do movies or something like that, right? So, and they probably get the same question. Right, over and over and over and over and over again. What's a really boring question that you try to avoid because it just has zero creative or interesting answers that you've found?
I'm going to think of 37 great examples as soon as we get off this Zoom call.
That's the book you get to write, is the boring questions.
Oh,
that would be
the boring questions book. Yeah.
And maybe it's not boring questions, but questions you don't really even need the answers to, that just don't bring the conversations forward, I guess.
Right. There's a lot of why'd you write the book? Kinds of questions, or, you know, and now I already said, tell me more about that. But when it's tell me about yourself, that is right on the edge of being a little too open-ended. Tell me more about yourself, is people are like, well, I was born here and I went to college and now I work here. Yeah. You know, people who don't have a lot of experience stepping into talking about why they are, a good, valid human being, that can be a question that sort of throws them off a little. So if it's someone who's not used to being talked to a lot, maybe find something a little less broad to start with than, you know, tell me about yourself and your background, or, you know, when you ask three or four questions all at the same time. I'm gonna keep thinking about that.
I know it's gonna be I'll think about that
now.
It's gonna haunt me all day. I'm gonna think about that all day. You get to talk about Prairie Public a lot, right? Mm-hmm. So sometimes you get to do the explaining, and people are gonna ask you questions because you're a wonderful advocate for, you know, the information in the shows and the programming. How do you transition from inquisitive, curious individual to, okay, I'm going to apostatize about all things awesome Prairie Public? And how do you make that transition?
Yeah, sure.
From listener to explainer or champion, cheerleader.
You know, it's funny because my heart was pounding at the beginning of this conversation, because I'm used to being the one in control of the conversation, and I know where it's going, or at least I think I know where it's going. And it's a much more vulnerable position to be in, sort of the why do you do what you do. So thank you for the reminder on that. It's good for me to practice that. I do a lot of, in the physical sense, is lifting the shoulders up really high and kind of squeezing and tightening and creating tension in the body. And then as soon as you drop them, it just automatically signals your body to start to calm down. And then when you do start to calm down, then you can be more thoughtful in the words that come out of your mouth. It goes back to starting with doing the work of practicing it. When I was first learning about how to be an advocate for Prairie Public, I had all of these talking points and I memorized them, and I said them in front of a mirror with a, you know, way giant smile on my face, just to practice the muscle memory of saying those things, because people can get really bogged down in the nervousness of talking about something, especially when it's something that matters to you, because, you know, your pulse quickens, your tone of voice quickens, you want to say everything, and then you get really, really flustered. It's the same reason why sometimes walk away from the argument, write down three things, and then come back to the argument, and you're going to have a lot more progress out of that, because you are approaching it, you know, more from a point of stability. So very much did the work of practicing, of memorizing. My daughter used to like throw things at me while I was practicing being on TV. One time she handed me a wet cat, which is a very difficult thing to maintain your composure while you're out doing those kinds of things. And then after that, it comes back to that listening, and I really am a consumer of public media and of thoughtful, engaging, meaningful conversations that can bring us to a pause. Even if they don't always spark an action, pausing and finding that time to deeply consider what it is we like, why we think the way that we do, that happens because it is something that I live and do and breathe all of the time. Again, there's very little separation between who I am and what I do.
I feel like a lot of nonprofit leaders are going to think the exact same thing.
Yeah.
because you're so passionate about it. And yeah. That's why people get, I think, so frustrated with their lack of progress or their perceived mm-hmm. lack of whatever, because they take it so personally, because there is no
yeah,
real...
It's a very vulnerable thing to put yourself out there, and you need that fire to get out there. Mm-hmm. But then you know, the bad part of that is like it stays with you all of the time, and learning where that can be misplaced is a big deal.
There's a lot of people on a treadmill somewhere listening to this going,
yeah.
Nodding up and down.
Yeah, yeah.
Vigorously.
For me, lots of twists.
Yeah,
all of it. Yoga practices.
You know, when people are in the nonprofit role, I think part of their need should be getting out there and telling their story to as many people as possible. And sometimes mm-hmm. they're going to get on the radio or they're going to get on TV. Mm-hmm. You're going to have this vulnerability that you're going to experience. You're going to have these nerves that you're going to have experience. Is there any type of tip or trick that you can give? Something, I mean, you've already done the whole shoulders and release, and you're going to think about a little breathing. That's great.
Yeah.
But what makes a good radio interview with somebody? What sort of, if you're going in cold and you're going to be on a show and mm-hmm. you're going to talk about your nonprofit, you're going to talk about your mission, what things can you help sort of guide that make better interviews than not?
Sure. I always try to get it to the passion behind why they're doing it. How does it feel is oftentimes a good question to get them to remember that they're excited or angry about something. Like, how did it feel when this happened? And then they go back in their minds. And so bringing it back to the reason behind something, just continuing to come back to that passion, that well, to me, is ultimately much more important than the, you know, the thing that they did.
Yeah. And outside of maybe one word answers when a host asks you something on the radio,
yeah.
Is there anything else to avoid while you're doing an interview to get that kind of really derails not only the
yeah.
air in the room, but at least the path mm-hmm. of conversation while you're trying to get out your nerves?
One of the hardest ones to get past is avoiding having to fill the space.
Mm.
Trying not to be afraid of 4 seconds of silence, because that's just enough time to trigger the other person to start to do that for you. You
right.
can be a little lazy then.
Yep.
And let them have that little bit more time. You know, that, I mean, there's a reason it's called a pregnant pause,
mm-hmm.
because it's all about the expectation. So don't be afraid of that silence. Really let that come and let that person have that space, that time to respond. Sometimes adjusting your tone of voice can be really helpful in a conversation, speeding up or slowing down, matching their energy. One thing that I feel like I am in a lot of ways is a mirror.
Mm.
And you can hear my tone of voice change so much in an interview. And it's why I'm not a newscaster. I'm not a person who is a single, calm voice just presenting the only information. And that is a fabulous skill to be able to stay, you know, stable in a situation like that. But it's not my skill set.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, trying to match the energy, the pacing, the freneticism, or just whatever it is that person is bringing to the table, there's always something I can connect to about that. So finding, if there's, maybe you don't know anything about classical music, but you really like baseball, and realizing that those two things are both different ways of telling stories, and those are both kinds of narrative, and coming back to this human evolution of storytelling and of building connection. And for the tens of thousands of years that humans communicated with each other without written language, it was still always the power of the human voice. And in talking about this and finding how whatever it is they're interested in might be slightly related to something that you are interested in, and then coming together on that middle ground as often as is possible, I like to have a conversation with that person that has nothing to do with the interview at hand. What is what they have for breakfast? What's their favorite food? You know, just something that I can talk about, get a sense of their personality, and then they're a little bit more at ease. I also purposely sometimes mess up to show them.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I'm like, this is Main Street and I'm Ashley Thornburg and coming up in the second half of the day, and I'll say it too fast. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do that again. Or I'll, sometimes I just actually mess up. I am a human, but I don't mind showing someone that I can mess up, that I can be vulnerable, that I can be a messy human being. For one, it's just not sustainable to do it the other way around. And it's not true. It's just not true. And I am not interested in anything that doesn't have a basis in truth and authenticity. I can be interested if you are super into basketball, or if you are super into researching moths, or I talk to the guy who does maintains the ice at the Fargo Curling Club because he did the ice at the Olympics, and we had a 20-minute conversation about what curling ice is and how it's different from other kinds of ice, because I knew that he cared. And I knew that he was coming from a place of concern and well-being, and that he was part of a team and doing something that was larger than himself. Did that answer your question?
Not, yeah. No, that does. I always have things to learn. I cannot do pregnant pauses. I do not like empty air. It is the most, that's where my personality is like super awkward, where I'm trying to trigger a question or a thought immediately upon the conclusion of whatever one says. Yeah. And I think it's part of this is like a podcast interview thing that I always have an issue with, but I always like the frenetic pace of a conversation that's authentically me, where I'm like, I'm going to be enthusiastic for at least an hour with you over coffee, and I'm going to be as caffeinated as I possibly can be, because that's authentically me. But if you are not sort of always at an 11, you know, it's not necessarily that's going to show. I love what you said about that as authenticity, which is be authentically you. Mm-hmm. When whatever conversations you're going to have, and you're going to have great ones as well. Don't need to force yourself to be somebody you're not, representing an organization that doesn't really, like, it doesn't feel right to you. Use your gut instinct. Mm-hmm. And don't do those things. But leads me to the improv question, which is, I've always thought that being involved in theater and being involved on stage at some point in your life will train you in a much better way to be ready for an improvisation of whatever question comes your way.
Yeah.
Find value in individuals who have, you know, again, experience is always a great thing, but have the improv skills to kind of chase down wherever angle you want to go. Or do you yourself find that improv is an important piece to the puzzle?
Oh, yeah, I absolutely do both. I mean, I do plenty of conversations where I have read about, you know, agronomy and taxonomy and all sorts of words that don't come up in the rest of my life ever. And I, you know the statistics about it, and I've done the research and I've read the book, and I write those questions. And then I do other interviews that we call swigging, S-Y-Y-G, see what you get. And you just go to an event and you walk around and you're like, that person seems interesting, or that person seems weird, or that person seems too quiet, you know, or whatever. I don't always know what it is that draws me to that person until 30 minutes into that conversation. And then I'm like, oh, that's why I did that. Okay, cool. Cool. So a lot of that's learning to trust yourself. But I do a ton of interviews too that are that same. I go into it with zero expectation because I have no idea who they are and what they're going to be. I knew very much that I had found where I needed to be, though, when I was walking in the Skyway, because that's where our building is downtown. And I looked outside and I was like, what is happening out there? This is very strange. And I walked back into my office and I said, somebody's doing something weird. I have to go. And my one coworker just said, okay. And then my boss just said, grab a windscreen, because he knew I was going outside. And they didn't question that I needed to go and figure out what this was. And it was a pastor who was doing drive-by Ash Wednesday. I'm not sure if blessings is the right word, but for people who didn't have time to go to church, he was like, I'm going to bring this church to you. And he turned out to be the first openly gay pastor in all of North Dakota. And just this conversation that I don't think would have happened if I had read the press release on pastor coming to the parking lot to do drive-by blessings. I would have tried to read about the history of Ash Wednesday, and I would have tried to read about the history of the church, and I would have tried to do all of these things to control that conversation. And there's forcing and there's allowing, and those are two very different energies, two very different qualities that need to find balance.
I love that, and it's great. Also, for an introvert, going out and asking random people a random question, that's a good skill you've developed over the years.
One of the best exercises I ever did at a training thing was at a training meeting was I had to do interviews blindfolded.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and we had a coworker or had a colleague along with us because we were walking down the streets of New York City blindfolded, and I was so bold in that conversation because I could not see the other person's, you know, judgy face reaction to me. I remember asking this guy at one point, like, what are you wearing? Like, that is not something people in the Midwest ask to other people.
No, it is not.
Yeah.
I love that so much. This has been so, I think, I'm going to listen back to this like probably more than once, because there's so many nuggets of information that I just have to remind myself on a regular basis of, like, okay, you know, you do this enough that you think you get a hang of it and you get a little complacent in your approach to some of those things. I think this was
time
just
to level up.
It's such a reminder to just, you can do it. And it just takes a little bit of practice and a little bit of gusto and just thinking differently about the interview process, the same way that everybody who is listening is like, how do I translate this to donor relations? I go, it's everything, you know, be improv, you know, use improv, use your research, use your intuitive gut, just be genuine and authentic and asking questions. The tell me more about that follow-up piece. If they're not going too much more in depth, pause, listen. There's so many great things that you have provided here. So I think people are probably going to go, well, I have to go and I'll have to support Prairie Public immediately. So how on earth do people go and get a hold of you, listen to you, and then most importantly, support you
and
what you're doing?
Well, what a great question. Thank you. PrairiePublic.org is the website. There are transmitters and translators across the state. So there's a different frequency as you're driving across the state that you can find on that website. The show that I host and produce is called Main Street. It is a long form conversation for the curious. It is 3 to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. It's rebroadcast 7 to 8 p.m. You can find out more at PrairiePublic.org/radio/Main Street. I think there's almost always the option to donate on that website as well. And then that's probably the easiest way without giving out all the different phone numbers is just to go to that website.
Well, fortunately, we've got a giant show notes page that probably have all those phone numbers there,
yeah,
too.
So while you're on 359-4145, pray
for exactly. Online. You go support call and you go, yes, with. Exactly. So, everybody, after you wrap up with this particular interview, go and click on all of those and give as much as possible. While you're clicking, by the way, if you haven't liked or you haven't shared or you haven't followed this podcast, you should give it 5-star rating while you can, because this is the type of 5-star interview that we do here on the official Do Good Better podcast. And then immediately go back and go to Prairie Public and go download all the shows and go donate as much as possible. It's been fantastic. Ashley, thank you.
Yeah.
For your perspective and your comments and your tips and your tricks. This is just such a wonderful thing to have in the arsenal of somebody who works at a small and medium-sized nonprofit, somebody who does a podcast all the time. It's a good reminder on a couple of things that we should be doing best practice-wise. But thank you so much for being a guest on the official Do Good Better podcast.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the opportunity to be a little bit uncomfortable and vulnerable and get out of my comfort zone and talk about what I do, and hopefully that makes a difference. And for people talking to donors, remember that when you're asking people for money, what you're really asking them to do is live up to their values. And what that means is they have to think about, are they living a value-driven life? And so always, always connect it back to the vision and the value.
Best parting shot tip I've heard in a very long time. Ashley, thanks so much for being a guest here on the official Do Good Better podcast.
Thank you.
Look, as someone who listens to the show, you know that I love helping small and medium-sized nonprofits. That's why we bring on the awesome experts and guests that get to talk to you about how to make your organization more awesome. So I've got a deal for you. I would like to help you. I would like to work with you. So if you go to dogooduniversity.com, that's dogoodyouniversity.com, and you register for one of the courses, I'm going to send you my best-selling book, Fundraise Awesomer, A Practical Guide to Staying Sane While Doing Good for free, because I really want you to do amazing work. Listen, dogooduniversity.com. Go pick out something, whether it's a board training or a gratitude training or whatever webinar you want to choose. Use the promo code podcast. Take 25% off of anything that you purchase. And I'm going to throw in a book as well, because I want you to do awesome. I want you to do awesomer. And I want you to do good better. Go to dogooduniversity.com today. Hey, did you just have a meeting with a donor and they told you something really, really important and you have no place to put it except for like maybe an Excel spreadsheet or, I don't know, a random piece of paper in your office? Go to DonorDoc.com. Get a CRM system that works. Get a donor database system that works. Get something that gives you beautiful reports and beautiful dashboards that even your crankiest board member will love. Go to DonorDoc.com. Use the code word DOGOODBETTER at checkout and get a month free. DonorDoc.com. Choosing a partner to help you achieve success in your business or personal finances is a big decision. You need a devoted advisor who's experienced and attentive and invested in helping you accomplish your goals. Hey, you know what that sounds like? Brady Martz. Brady Martz knows that you got a lot of options to choose from, but we're confident that Brady Martz is the right accounting firm for you. They got more than a half a century of experience making every day count through tax, accounting, audit, and business advisory services. So contact Brady Martz to learn more about their unique solutions that they can provide you, your nonprofit.